नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So it's May 27, 2023 in Villa Vrindavan. We're reading from Canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 23, Text 15. Gatvata Patni Shalayam Dvisvasina Swalankrita Natvadvija Satir Gopa Prashrita Idam Abhruvan.
Please chant.
So, one thing I really like about what Krishna talks about sattva guna in the Bhagavad Gita is that when you're in sattva guna, you know what is to be done and what is not to be done. What is binding, what is liberating, what is to be feared, what is not to be feared. Is this something we would all like? Would everyone like to know what to do and what not to do? This is a problem for us almost every day, isn't it? Maybe many times during the day. Do I go here? Do I not go here? Do I say this? Do I not say this? How do I say it? When do I say it? To whom do I say it? What do I do? How do I do it? Right? It's difficult to tell what is going to be the results of our action, if it's going to be liberating or binding, pleasing or displeasing. And trying to pick the right time, the right place, the right way to do things. This is a problem for everybody, yes? All the time. How to do this, how to have this vision. So, of course, in the Shastra, there's so many rules of behavior. And then every society has rules of behavior. I mean, there's laws, and then in addition to that, there's so many customs. And we see here, I isolated 8 things here that were being followed in this interchange between the cowherd boys and the Dvija Satihi, the chaste lady brahmanas. But I was thinking that these rules are a little different when we're dealing with these pure devotees and when we're dealing with conditioned souls and people in general. And sometimes we get these things mixed up, and I'm seeing that this mix-up becomes a problem in our Hare Krishna society, doesn't it? Because rules are different depending on who you are and where you are and what your consciousness is. This is true even in the world, yes? Rules are different for 5-year-old children than for 15-year-olds or for 50-year-olds. And they're different depending on your status in society. Right? The rules for the king or for the president are a little different. The rules for the police officers are a little different. So the rules to decide, because we need some guidance, what to do and what not to do. So the rules in the scriptures that tell you what to do and what not to do, what are they based on? Reward and punishment, right? Do this and you'll get good karma. You'll be rich, you'll be beautiful, you'll be educated, you won't have any legal problems. And do this and then you'll get bad karma. And you'll be poor and you'll be ugly and you'll be sick and you'll have legal problems. Right? So these are the karma and vikarma of the world. And they're based on, what are they ultimately based on? Reward and punishment, and then they're going to get good and bad. What are they based on? What kind of emotion in the living being is this based on? Fear. It's very fear-based. I don't have what I want, I don't have what I need, how am I going to get it, how am I going to get it properly, how am I going to get it so I won't get in trouble, how am I going to get it so I get the right result. It's coming also from a scarcity mentality, isn't it? Thomas Merton said we all have a God-shaped vacuum in our heart. And we feel this kind of unlimited longing. And so all of these rules are meant for those who have fear, their whole existence is being governed by fear and by longing. Icha dvesha. Desire and hatred. Attachment and aversion. And Krishna talks about how the Vedic rules are governing this attachment and aversion. And it's also based on envy, isn't it? All these rules. Like you think about the Ishopanishad, stick to your quota. Don't impinge on someone else's quota. Why do you have to tell people that? Because they're envious. I want to take something that's not mine. Even if we talk about here opportune time, why do we do things at the wrong time? You ever done something at the wrong time and it didn't work out very well? You talked to the right person about the right thing, but you chose the wrong time? Yeah? So why do we do that? Because we want to take something that's not ours. We have some sense of, you know, urgent crisis. I need to get this done now. Or I need to get this done in this way, and I have to do it harshly, because otherwise nobody will listen to me, and I won't get what I need. Well, it's based on a lack of satisfaction and envy, so there's these tight regulations, and this yamaraj, and these police officers in the universe, and Krishna's the sun and the moon looking at us all the time, and, you know, all the witnesses. But then there's a whole other set of rules that are being followed here by the cowherd boys, Gopala, the cowherders, and these wives of the brahmanas, Dvija, Satihi. And these are rules based on something else. What is the intrinsic feeling in these jivas?
Love.
That's completely different. I remember reading once, not from a devotee. Why do you have to drive carefully out of fear? Why can't you drive carefully out of love? And I thought, yeah. Why do you have to be nice to other people out of fear? Why can't you be nice to other people out of love? And I went, yeah. Everything we think we need, Krishna says, kamashrita, we take shelter of lust. Ahankara ashrita, we take shelter of our false ego. Everything we think that we need, fear and envy and greed and lust and anger to motivate us, we can also be motivated by love. And Bhaktivinoda Thakura says the only two rules in the spiritual world, there are rules, but there's only two. Wouldn't that be nice if there were only two? You know, one of the symptoms of a bureaucracy? The rule book gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. Have you noticed that happening? I remember I was once in giving a class in Split, and this one guest, we were saying something about rules, and this one guest said, you know, I was told there's no hard and fast rules, but the longer I come, the more rules I'm being told over and over again. You know, we have these... the rules get more and more and more complicated. Well, if this temple president does this at this time of day with his nose like this, then there's this consequence. But there's two rules. Anybody know what the Bhaktivinoda Thakura said? There's two rules. One do and one don't. Do have what? What do you think? Love. And don't have envy. That's all. If you do have love and you don't have envy, then everything else will follow. This reminds us of Rupa Goswami, who says, if you always remember Krishna and you never forget him, then all of the rules naturally follow from that. So we're going to look at these behaviors here, and we should remember that these behaviors are naturally flowing from the love of the cowherd boys for Krishna and the love of the Dvija Satihi, the chaste Brahmanis, for Krishna. Now, as we go through these, I'd like us to think, and maybe you're already thinking, well, I don't know if I have love for Krishna. I was just hearing today Prabhupada saying how Mahaprabhu said that he didn't have any love for Krishna. So if Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says he has no love for Krishna, I don't know what I'm going to say about myself. And the first time that I met Srila Prabhupada, when my father asked Prabhupada, he said, I'm coming to the temple not because I'm a Krishna devotee, although he became somewhat of a Krishna devotee. He said, I'm coming to see my daughter and son-in-law. Is that all right? And Prabhupada was sitting like this, kind of leaning back, and his dhoti was up around his right leg. You could see his leg and his 2 feet, and he was leaning like this, and he was smiling, and he was very casual. He said, yes. He said, they are loving Krishna. And I was sitting there thinking, I'm not sure if I love Krishna. He said, chanting and dancing are symptoms of loving Krishna. And again, I was thinking, I'm not sure if I'm chanting and dancing because I love Krishna. He said, so they are loving Krishna and you are loving them. So two things equal to the same thing are equal to each other. Mathematics and Krishna consciousness. But anyway, we may be thinking, well, I don't know if I love Krishna. So what am I going to do? I guess I have to follow all the Vedic injunctions that are fear-based and scarcity-based and trying to curb down my envy. But my dear friends, that's not what we're doing in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. That's not what we're doing in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. We are not trying to inculcate our members with fear and scarcity and motivate people to follow a bunch of rules that are intended for people motivated by those things. We are trying to awaken our what?
Love
for Krishna. Prabhupada was asked once, what pleases you the most? And the person who asked it was very motivated. They wanted Prabhupada to say what? Anyone know?
Book distribution.
And what did Prabhupada say? If you love Krishna. So what we are trying to do, my dear friends, is we are trying to practice Abhyas Yoga, Krishna says. What does he say? Bhagavad Gita 12:8. He says, just always think of me with love. And then he says, if you can't do that, 12:9, he says, then what should you do? Abhyas Yoga. You do practice yoga. Now, how do you practice love? How do I practice love? Prabhupada gives the example that used to be in India, there was a child marriage. Now it's illegal. But used to be, it was child marriage. So the girl was 5, maybe the boy was 7, and they had some little marriage ceremony. And of course, there was no love, 5 and 7 year old. But the families would meet, and they would say to the girl, you know, here's some sweets, bring them to your husband. Oh, very nice. They would practice. So that by the time they were actually mature and actually got married in the real sense, they had already developed some relationship. I mean, if we think about even in ordinary life, people give flowers, right? Especially they give flowers like, I don't know what you have here, but in America we have like Valentine's Day where you give flowers to your romantic interest, and Mother's Day you give flowers to your mother. Those two holidays practically keep the florist in business, you know? That in funerals, of course. So when you give flowers, it's an expression of love that already exists, and that's what's happening here in today's verse. But giving flowers also helps develop love, doesn't it? Right? If you want to develop love, if you want to practice love for somebody, you also give flowers. You can also give flowers if you're apologizing. That's a way of practicing love, isn't it? Oh boy, I said the wrong thing to my wife. Let me buy a dozen roses. You know, you're practicing. So, of course, the love of the cowherd boys and the brahmanas' wives, it's not static, it's ecstatic. In fact, they're ornamented with ecstasy. So their love is also growing. They're not practicing love anymore. But the things they do for Krishna are not only an expression of existing love, but it is also a way to grow love. Like Krishnadas Kaviraj says how, you know, Krishna's looking at Radharani or the gopis and they're looking at him and there's this competition. Who's going to have more love? Yes? And as they look at each other with love, they get more and more beautiful. Ravindasrupa, remember, he was saying how at a wedding, when the bride and groom look at each other, even if they're ugly, they look beautiful because they have love. Yes? That's the lie in the Bhagavatam where it says you can lie at a wedding. So Hari Parshad says that's the lie you're allowed to tell. Oh, what a beautiful bride. But when she's full of love for the groom, she looks beautiful, even if she's ugly. Yes? What to speak of Krishna and his beloveds as they look at each other with love, they grow in beauty. So we're not saying that their behavior in today's verse is just an expression of existing love. It's also growing love. Now, we are trying, as members of the Hare Krishna movement, as Gaudiya Vaishnavas, we are practicing these behaviors. We're going to go through these behaviors. We're practicing these behaviors, but when we practice these behaviors, my dear friends, please don't practice them in a fear-based, scarcity mentality way. We should be practicing them to develop love. And the regulations from the shastras that are meant for fear-based, scarcity-based people generally do not apply to us. At least they shouldn't. If they're applying to us, then we're doing something intrinsically wrong. Then we've just become some ordinary karmakanda religion of the world. And there's already enough of them, and they already make a bad name for themselves among the materialistic and atheistic people. Am I correct? Yes? All right. So let's go through these. All right. So first thing, I'm not necessarily going in exactly the order of Jiva Goswami's commentary, but respect for a no. Having respect for a no, N-O. If you ask somebody once and they say no, you don't ask again. Now, I know in some cultures, you're supposed to ask again after a no, because a person gives a no as part of being polite. So I heard in Japan, you have to get, you know, three no's. You have to give three no's before you can give a yes. Please come to my house for dinner. No, 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 no. Oh, I'd like you to come. No, 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 no. Please, please come. No, no, no. Please, I really want you to come. Okay, okay, but just a little rice and soy sauce. So there are cultures who do this because you want to make sure you don't inconvenience anyone. You want to make sure that you don't say yes to something that someone's not actually able to give. And you see this in India too, right? Would you like some more rice? No, no, no. Took me a long time to figure this out, how to deal with this. It's like, no! No, no! But the general principle is you don't force. That's the principle. You don't force someone to give you something that they don't want to give. Now, in a fear-based rule, this is the Ishivashya concept. I stick to my quota. What's the most extreme forms of taking? That would be killing, right? I kill the body of an animal. It doesn't want to give me its life. I kill it anyway. Or I kill another human being. Stealing. Rape. I'm taking something that the person doesn't want to give. They actively don't want to give, and I'm taking it from them by force. So those are the most extreme forms. But taking someone's time that they don't want to give you? Taking someone's energy that they don't want to give you? A friend of mine recently wrote that, a devotee friend, that she was going to some conferences and she just wanted to focus on the conference. She didn't want to give her energy to socializing, so although she had friends living in that place, she didn't tell them she was coming. And she didn't stay at the temple. She stayed like in some Airbnb and she just went to the conference and went back. And then they found out that she had gone. And they were so offended. She said, what do I do? I said, next time maybe tell them in advance, listen, I'd love to see you, I care about you, but I really need, I have to have these, what do they say nowadays, boundaries, right? I only have enough energy for this. I remember in 2006, I was at Govardhan at Kartik, and I decided that I was just going to chant all day. So I did one of these 64 rounds pratas. And that was fine when I was at Govardhan, but it wasn't fine when I came into Vrindavan during Kartik. If you ever tried to chant 64 rounds in a day in Vrindavan in Kartik, maybe if you stay in your room, you know, but as soon as you walk, like from the MVT to Krishna Balaram temple, I don't know what it's like for all of you, but it's, you know, every like half a meter. Oh, Urmila! You know, so I went to one of my friends there and I said, you've been chanting at least like 60, 64 rounds every day for years and you live in Vrindavan. How do you do it? And she said, I just say, oh, I'd love to talk to you, but I have to chant. I'm like, okay. So we take things from people that they don't want to give. We take their time, we take their energy, we take their concern. I was just talking to a devotee in Norway about a mutual acquaintance of ours who keeps asking for help and never follows any advice that's given. Have you ever dealt with people like that? And they'll ask you advice for exactly the same problem for years? What are they doing? They're taking from you. And after a while, like, I don't want to help this person, but they come, can you help? Can you help? To accept a no. To accept a no. Not to push, not to take, not to steal. And to accept a no, my dear friends, requires a lack of envy and a lack of fear. It requires faith that Krishna will give me whatever I need. That if this other jiva at this time, in this place, in this way, does not want to give me something, that no matter how desperately I feel they must, they should, they have to, I can let go of that feeling that there's an urgent crisis if they won't talk to me right now about this question that I have had for 10 years and ask them 10,000 times. And I can let go and say, Krishna will take care. Krishna will take care. Krishna will give me, right? Yogakshema Vahamyaham. Krishna will give me whatever I need. And that is the next point, faith in Krishna. Now, in this case, the cowherd boys weren't exhibiting faith in Krishna in the sense that they didn't go again. I mean, they did initially. We're hungry. They were hungry, right? They had left that morning without breakfast, and they were hungry. So they had faith in Krishna that if the brahmanas wouldn't give us anything, that we'll get fed somehow or other. But now they had faith in Krishna that I can violate this ordinary principle of not taking a no, and I can ask again, and it'll be okay. I won't be disrespectful. Krishna says, ask again. Well, I'm not supposed to ask again, but Krishna says, ask again. But this time, instead of asking the dvijas, ask the dvija, who? Patnis. Patnis, what does it say? We go up? Sati. The chaste, the pure brahmanas. Because who is more pure, the brahmanas or the brahmana patnis? Patnis, they were sati. Asking. So they had faith that if I do something that's not normally done, it will be okay. They had faith first that Krishna would feed them. They had faith I could. So that faith in Krishna, that essential faith, Krishna will take care. Many years ago, I heard a nice mantra that I really like. In the end, it will all be okay. If it's not okay, it's not the end. It's very helpful, you know, things don't go your way and you think you're not getting what you need and you're like, it'll be okay. In the end, it'll be okay. If it's not okay, it's not the end, it'll be okay. I can be peaceful, I can depend on Krishna. The next thing is humility. So the boys were naturally humble, right? We have prashritaha. They were naturally humble, but they became even more humble because why? Does anyone remember what Jiva Goswami said? Why did they become more humble?
Anybody? Because they saw the ecstasies.
Well, that could be also. They saw the ornaments of ecstasies. I like that. But what had they heard before they went to the...
Krishna said they were...
Krishna was glorifying them. Now, let's look objectively. I mean, I know in one sense all devotees are equal. But in another sense, like in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Sanatana Goswami talks about it, and also in Upadeshamrita, grades of devotees. So who do you think is a higher, more intimate devotee? The brahmana wives or the cowherd boys? What do you think? The cowherd boys. Come on. Had the brahmana's wives even seen Krishna up to this point? No. And what were the cowherd boys doing every day? They're playing with Krishna. They're even saying, you know, you think you're so strong. You know, Sri Rama could beat you any day. Who do you think you are? They're taking his samosas. When we traveled from Norway, the devotee made us, she said they samosas, they were more like big, like calzones. And she filled them with spinach and paneer. Imagine if she had filled them with jasmine flowers. So that's what the cowherd boys do. They take Krishna's samosas when he's not looking. You know, they say, hey, Krishna, there's a monkey. And while Krishna's looking for the monkey, they open up the samosas, they take out the sabji, and they put jasmine flowers in it. Please don't try this at home. And they also tell Krishna, you know, close your eyes, open your mouth. And what do they put in his mouth? A flower. They defeat Krishna in wrestling, and Krishna has to do what when he's defeated? He has to carry them around. That's just like young boys in this world, they like to wrestle and fight and insult each other, isn't it? Yeah? So they do that. They're not thinking Krishna's God. Like when Krishna kills a demon, they just think, huh, Krishna must be some, maybe he's like a demigod. And then what do they think? Gosh, then maybe we're demigods too. That's how they're thinking. That's their mood. Whether Sakyabhav means a sense of equality, isn't it? Yes? Remember when Drupad said to Drona, I'm sorry, I can't be your friend anymore. I'm now the king. I'm better than you. Friendship is between equals. I think he kind of regretted that. But the coward boys, they have this feeling. So, and the brahmana's wives, they haven't even seen Krishna. And still, the coward boys, they're thinking, oh, Krishna said they're great devotees. And so their natural humility increased, and they dealt with them with great humility. Imagine if we had this mood in our Hare Krishna movement. In the Srimanashiksha of Raghunath Das Goswami, he talks about different kinds of anartas. He talks about the anarta of speech, which is like a prostitute that steals your wealth. He talks, or a tiger that steals it, eats you. And the doing activities you know you shouldn't do, like highway robbers of lust, anger, envy, greed. And then he talks about when you do things you think are bhakti, but they're not. And he says that's like you think you're taking a bath, but it's not water you're bathing in. It's what? Anyone know?
Urine of a donkey.
The urine of a donkey. A very big donkey, too. And it's burning. Burning donkey urine. You can tell if you're taking a bath in donkey urine instead of Krishna prema because your heart's burning. You're dissatisfied. So Bhaktivinoda describes different ways you can take a donkey urine bath. And one of them is when you give all respect to famous, rich, and important people and you ignore humble devotees. In the name of preaching, oh, we have to give some because these are important people. But we don't find this with the coward boys. They're not thinking, oh, these are just people living outside. They're on the border of Raja. They're not real Rajvasis. And they're just women. And they never met Krishna. And we're Krishna's friends. And we're the inner circle. Did they think like that? No. And are they the inner circle? Yeah, they're really they're the real deal. But they didn't think like that. They thought, oh, here are some great devotees. Let's be humble. Yeah. I mean, what did Jesus say? He'd say, you show your love for me by how you treat the least. Isn't it? How you treat someone who you think is lower than you. Or someone who, by objective standards, is lower. All right, opportune time, choosing the right time. So we mentioned this already. What happens when we choose the wrong time? I was talking about this actually in Los Angeles. There we were talking, the verse was about Kasyapa and Diti and how the Sanskrit was vikarma, that their union was vikarma. And why was it vikarma? Because it was at the wrong time. They were married, they wanted a child, but because it was the wrong time, they produced like somebody worse than Hitler. Right? Wrong time. And it always struck me how in the Gita, when Krishna defines charity, like charity and sattva, you give to the right person at the right time, in the right mood, just because it's the right thing to do. Because people in sattva, they like to do the right thing. They want to be in harmony with everything that's right and flow with the universe. And seriously, that's why it's so hard to get them to be devotees, because they're already flowing with the universe at the right time. And then people in rajas, they give to the right person at the right time, but they think, oh, what am I going to get out of this? Or they give because they feel obligated. You have to bow down to that devotee. Okay, I got to bow down to that devotee, yes. You got to do the service, that's your... All right, I'm going to do it. I don't want to do this service. So that's rajas. And then what's interesting is in tamas, you can give to the wrong person, we get that. You give to the alcoholic so they can go buy more alcohol. That's easy to understand. But the other thing is they give to the right person, but they give it at the wrong time, or with disrespect. Here, Swami, take this cherry. But or it can be at the wrong time. You know, the Swami's on the toilet and you give them cherry. You wake them up at 1 a.m. Hey, Swami! And we've all seen that doing the right thing at the wrong time leads to a bad result, which is the definition of vikarma. Vikarma is something that leads to a bad result. So timing matters. And I'm assuming timing matters because Krishna says that he is time, kalosmi. You can say that he's talking in his mood of Lord Shiva. And Diti got in trouble with Lord Shiva because she didn't follow time. So having the right timing. Sometimes it's a matter of waiting an hour. Now finding that when we studied policy implementation, when I was studying at the graduate school, policy implementation, one of them is finding the right window of opportunity. So what was the right time here? The Brahmanas, the pure Brahmanis, they had finished cooking. They had taken a bath. They were sitting peacefully. It was the right time to ask. It probably wouldn't have been the right time while they're in the middle of cooking. Hi, can I have something? I'm sorry, I'm cooking right now. And this leads into the right atmosphere. Not only the right time, but the right atmosphere. Oh, does anyone remember? It might be important because we're going to have all these conversations the next few days. So what was the right atmosphere? Does anybody remember what Jiva Goswami said?
Peaceful heart.
Peaceful heart. You ever try to have a conversation when you don't have a peaceful heart? Or the other person doesn't have a peaceful heart? What else?
Well-dressed.
Well-dressed, properly dressed. For the occasion. I mean, that depends what you're having a conversation about. Why do you think that matters? Why do you think how we're dressed matters?
First impression,
yes. Also, what else?
Showing respect.
Yeah, any other things that are important about dress? Yeah.
So you're in sync with the other people and the mood and the whole ethos of the place. You know, you're dressed up there. Sweats to go running. President of the United States wears sweats at a certain time.
Right, to be in sync with the situation. Yeah, I like that. Okay, very nice. And then the other one was proper behavior. Just like for meetings, there's Robert's Rules of Order. Right? There's this proper behavior. There's some understood way of how we're going to have a conversation. And this point is very problematic, because what's proper behavior is radically different from one culture to another. And we don't have time today at all to get into this. But my personal conviction is one of our problems in our international society for Krishna consciousness is what's respectful in France is disrespectful in Germany. And we think we have some kind of generic Vaishnav culture, but my dear friends, we definitely do not, and nor will we ever. And nor is the world meant to be like that. Krishna's a variety person. Right? We have this plant here, one plant. Are any two leaves the same on the same plant? What to speak of the two plants of the same species? Every snowflake is different, every grain of sand is different. Who looks at all the snowflakes? I mean, who cares? Oh, Krishna must care. And so there are different cultures, and different cultures have different standards. Every culture has a standard of respect, but how you show respect varies greatly from one culture to another. I mean, I'm from New York, where we have what we call very short pause times. I think Italy's also like this. And we over-talk. I think Italians also over-talk. It's not interrupting. It's the way we talk. I'm talking, I pause for 2 seconds to give you an opening. You pause for 2 seconds, or we even over-talk, and it's not a problem. But there are other cultures where they have a very long pause time, like China. And so if I'm talking and I pause for the 2 seconds, the Chinese person next to me is thinking, she never gives me a chance to say anything. And if I have this long pause, I feel really awkward, like, why isn't anybody saying anything? There's all sorts of analysis of culture, what we call power distance. It's one way of analyzing culture, individualistic or collective. I heard one preacher in ISKCON basically preaching that we should all become a collectivistic culture, that all Vaishnavas should have a collectivistic culture. And I'm thinking, it's not going to work. Americans are never going to give up their individualistic culture, and certainly Australians and Brazilians are never going to do that. Good luck. So proper behavior is very different in different cultures. And it's something that I wish more devotees studied. Sri Prahlad has done a lot of study on cultural differences. I really wish it was something that was more part of our understanding. That what's proper behavior in one culture is very improper behavior in another culture. But that has to be there for conversation. And when we have a conference like today, where we're bringing in people literally from all different cultures, it's something to be aware of, that if I think someone's being disrespectful, it may not be the case. They may simply have a different cultural understanding of what respect is. This idea of proper behavior also varies between the varnas. All right, then being ornamented. When I was growing up, I was trained that, you know, I couldn't go out of the house without being ornamented. This is going to sound very funny to many of you, but it was one of my biggest struggles. My husband and I took vanaprastha in 96. It took me 10 years to stop wearing earrings. I would try, and then I would just feel, I'm not dressed. This idea, right, this is also given by Kasyapa to Diti as part of her vow. He says, don't go out without ornaments. But what ornaments do all devotees have? And these are our ornaments, right? The devotee ornaments are our tulsi beads, our tilak. These are our ornaments. Yeah, there you go. You have a kavacha. Mahaprabhu is well ornamented. I have my Sudarshan ring. This was handmade by Sarva Mahaprabhu. And I edited his book, Salted Bread, about his time when he was imprisoned by the KGB and beaten, and as a gift he handmade me a Sudarshan ring. But what are the most important ornaments? These Dvija Satihi, what were their most important ornaments? Ecstatic. That they were ecstatic. Prabhupada said, if you're not joyful, you can't make any advancement. It's one of the symptoms, right? Rajavija Rajaviyam Pavitrami Dibutam Pratiksha Vagamandam Su Sukam. Someone asked me years ago, how do I make Krishna consciousness fun? I said, if you're conscious of Krishna, you're having fun. He's always having fun. I said, I don't know. If you're not having fun, I don't know who you're conscious of. Lord Shiva, maybe, I don't know. Durga's. Radharani is described as being ornamented with the ecstatic symptoms. Those are manifestations of love. Krishna wants us to be happy by seeing him, and we should be seeing him everywhere. We should be seeing him in the light and the sounds and the heat of the room. Don't you want people to be happy by seeing you? Like many of us are seeing old friends here. So suppose you see one of your old friends and they go, oh, hi, nice to see you. Or they just walk past, they look down like they pretend they didn't see you. You're like, shoot. So Krishna's everywhere. We should be happy seeing. And that's our real ornaments. And we have some humility here with the Brahmins' wives, although Sanatana Goswami says they were purer than their husbands. Jiva Goswami said, still they acted externally dependent on their husbands. Rupa Goswami has one of the lists of the 64 Angas, don't be neglectful in ordinary dealings. I mean, there are some avadutas, but you know, we're not really supposed to behave like Rishabhdev and Jed Bharata. I don't think that would really please Rupa Prabhupada. So to follow external things. And the eighth thing is talking about the Lord. So these Brahmana ladies, they were talking about the Lord with each other. So to talk about the Lord, and to talk about the Lord with like-minded people. Rupa Goswami has a whole section of at the end of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu about don't do things that impede your devotion. Do things that will nourish your devotion or at least be neutral. And one of the most important is to have like-minded persons. To be very careful, especially if we're going to really reveal our heart. We should make sure we're with like-minded people. Okay, so what have we looked at? Respecting and know, having faith in Krishna, having humility, choosing the right time, having the right atmosphere, having the right ornaments, following external behavior, and talking about the Lord with like-minded persons. So see, these are some of the rules of love. So these are some of the ways that we should behave as sadhakas. This is how we practice love and grow love. And if we're doing that, then we really don't need to be concerned, as Krishna told Arjuna, you don't need to be concerned with the flowery words of the Vedas. So I think we have 5 minutes, or four. If there's questions, comments, additions, subtractions, corrections, chastisements. Yes, Guru.
Thank you for your class. So you spoke about being sensitive to basically desha kala patra, right?
Yes.
Circumstance, even to be sensitive to the externals, not to be conflicting with the externals and so on. And then you get better.
Can you use the microphone so the people online can hear?
Microphone. Hello. Is it on?
It's on.
It's on. Okay. But in earlier part of your class, you spoke about, you invoked Jiva Goswami's idea of a peaceful heart. So, two questions. How do you understand what a peaceful heart is? And two, how does that translate into the externals and being sensitive to desha kala patra?
Can you explain what you see as the conflict?
I don't necessarily see a conflict. So in other words, how do you understand what a peaceful heart is?
Okay, I'm not sure if I understand what you're getting at, so I'll try and you correct me if I'm not getting it. So I understand a peaceful heart on two levels. One is to be free from attachment and aversion. And this concept is becoming extremely popular in the world in general. The whole mindfulness, being, you know, present moment awareness, that is, it's very, very, very popular even in people who are not religious. And frankly, even in people who don't consider themselves spiritual. Being able to step back from the thoughts, feelings, and desires that are constantly going through our mind and body, and be an observer and say, I'm just going to let them go through and I'm not going to engage with them. That if anger is going through me, I don't have to yell and scream and break things, and nor do I have to repress it and I'm not going to show my anger. But you just step back and let it flow through you, like Krishna talks about rivers going to the ocean that are always being filled with the rivers. So that's one level, which is really part of Gyan Yoga, although it's also part of the practice of bhakti, because it's one of the angas of bhakti, not to be overwhelmed with joy and lamentation, to step back from the thoughts, the feelings, and desires that constantly go through the mind. Prabhupada talks about this in his purport to 14, to 22, to 25 in the Gita. that as long as we have a material body, we're going to have these different disturbances of the gunas in our body and mind. Please don't think that if you become a pure devotee that these things won't happen in the body and mind. But one remains neutral. He who does not hate illumination, attachment, or delusion when they appear, nor long for them when they disappear. Now that's very much related to how one achieves peace in all the forms of yoga. So in karma yoga, what does Krishna say? Twaja chantin kalevaram. As you give up, as you renounce the fruits of your action, you get peace. We already talked about Gyan Yoga. In Gyan Yoga, when you become detached from attachment and aversion, you get peace. In Gyan Yoga, when you have the proper asana and the proper pranayama, and then you hold dharana, what you're meditating on, then dhyana, you meditate on what you're holding, you achieve peace. Now, to do Gyan Yoga, you have to already have achieved some peace through Karma Yoga or Gyan Yoga. Now, in Bhakti Yoga, we certainly involve some of these aspects of peace. We give up the results of our actions to Krishna, therefore we become peaceful because we're not trying to enjoy the fruits. We become detached from we step back from the thoughts, feelings, and desires that are coming from the modes. And we also hold and meditate on the form of the Lord. But ultimately, how do we get peace in Bhakti Yoga?
To understand Krishna, to enjoy them.
Bhaktiram yagata pasam sarvalokam eshram sugadam sarvabhutanam gyatramam shanti vishanti. Bhaktiram tapasam, I'm giving everything to Krishna. Sarvalok Maheshram, he's in charge and he knows what he's doing. I generally don't believe that. I think I know much more how to run the universe than he does. But people go to God, please let me have this, let this, like we're telling him he doesn't know what he's doing. And then Suritam. Somebody can know what they're doing and be the enjoyer, but they can be mean. They can be a really good controller and they can be the enjoyer, but they could be mean. But Krishna is loving. So therefore he says, Nir Yoga Kshema Abhavan, what is that, 245, I think? Give up all desires for gain and safety, be established in the self. Why then, what is it, 923? Yoga Kshema Vaham Yam? Because I'm taking care of you, so that's the peace. And when we have that peace, we can be peaceful in any Deshkalapatra, actually. Right? Krishna says at 620, this is actual freedom from all miseries, from material contact, when you're established in the truth. What's the truth? My best friend is running the show. That's the truth. A nice story I read by a Christian author. He said that he and his wife were driving somewhere with their kids, and they stopped to get petrol, and he drove too fast and the police pulled him over and gave him a ticket, and then they also stopped to run some other errands and his wife stopped to drop some things off, and then they're driving and then his little 3-year-old daughter said, Daddy, where are we going? And he said, we're going to see some horses. And she said, okay. And he thought from the 3-year-old's perspective, they just get in this big machine and, you know, it stops and it starts again and some lights are flashing and some guy comes over and this happens and that happens. But she was peaceful, not because she knew where they were going or what they were doing, but because she knew who was driving. So the devotee can have a peaceful heart in any situation, but still they're sensitive because Krishna is time. So they may be internally peaceful. And I think being sensitive to Deshkalapatra actually depends on being peaceful at heart. Because if I'm not peaceful at heart, I'm going to try to manipulate things in opposition to what's going on. You know, if it's not the opportune time or not the opportune place or not the right people, but my heart is disturbed, then I will try to force the situation. No, you have to talk to me now. You have to talk to me now about this. You have to do this now. This has to happen. And if I'm peaceful, I can, go with the flow. I can say, all right, I'm going to do the right thing at the right time and trust that Krishna will take care of me. Is that all right?
I think so. Thank you.
And talking about the right time, I think we need to stop. So Srila Prabhupada ki jai.